Este em português é. Este em português era assim. No outro é assim. Personalizar. Proteção do ecrã. Definições. Alterar definições de energia. Não. Alterar quando o computador ajustar. Alterar opções de energia. Saber sobre mais opções de energia.
É tudo na nuca.
Desempenho, mas eu não quero isto. Desempenho é isto. Alto desempenho. Então, alto desempenho.
Estes?
Alto desempenho. Eu pergunto se quer voltar ou não.
Dois fecheiros que estão em ouro.
Pô, não cabemos os dois. Então vou buscar outro. Viva, bom dia.
Muito bom dia a todos.
Very good morning to all of you, and welcome to Évora University and to the town of Évora. We're now going to resume our work. I wonder if you can hear the interpretation. Can everyone hear? Can the people listening to English hear the English interpretation? Can you hear the English interpretation in your headsets now? So, are you all hearing the interpretation at this point? So, let me start again and let me welcome you all to Évora, to the university, and to the region of Alentejo. We're now going to resume the work of the 16th Interparliamentary Conference, Eureka 2009. And this is just an initial welcoming session to all of you. We have the Dean of Évora University here with us, Professor Georges Araújo, and we have the Mayor of Évora, José Ernesto Oliveira. So they're here to wish you a warm welcome, and let me give the floor immediately to the Dean of the University, Professor Araújo. Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome to the University of Évora. It is an honor for us to welcome you here, and we hope that you have an enjoyable stay and that you will be able to get to know our country a little bit better during your stay. Just a few brief words to give you an idea of the Évora University. This is a very old university. This university dates back to the 16th century. This year, we are celebrating 450 years since we were founded. This university was very important in historical terms because it was responsible for training missionaries who left for the farthest points of the world and accompanied the Portuguese explorers. We have sent missionaries to Japan, to China, to South America, India. And therefore, we actively participated in cultural globalization, and this since the 16th century. This is a fairly small university on the European scale. We have 7,000 students, 600-odd teachers. And we provide courses in all branches of science, human sciences, and art. We have four schools, art school, human and social science school, and a science and technology school, and a health school as well. So these four areas are covered in each school. We have certain branches that are more developed than others. So, as I say, we're a fairly small university, but we focus very much on quality and we are striving for excellence. I hope you will have a moment to quickly visit the university, and if you do, you will realize that it is a very old building. And you will see there are old classrooms. We have the old chairs and the stools where students sat. And the old structure is still intact. This was, in fact, one of the first schools to be built in Portugal, the first building designed to be a university. Coimbra University is slightly older than this one, but it was located in pre-existing buildings. The building that you will see was designed exactly for a university, and it was the first university purpose-built building in this country. The front of the university, there are two female figures, statues. At the time when this was built, the preference went to female figures. One holds the sun, and the other holds the moon. The first, holding the sun and the scepter, symbolize the royal power, and the other holding the moon and the cross signifies the power of the church. And the reason for this was that our the person who founded the university was a king. He was also a cardinal and archbishop of Évora, so he was playing on both sides at the same time, if you like. So the two powers, the royal power and the power of the church, are symbolized on the front entrance of the university. Today we give another meaning to these symbols. For us, the sun represents the power of knowledge, and the moon represents a spreading of this knowledge. That's to say, the light of the sun is projected onto the moon, and it represents the spreading of knowledge, socializing of knowledge. This we do through transferring knowledge throughout society, specifically to businesses and industry, and lifelong learning of the population at large. So the different ways of spreading knowledge, of course. So with these brief words, I just wanted to give you a quick description of the Évora University. And having said that, I hope that your stay will be very profitable and useful for you and will be helpful in your work, and that you will have an enjoyable day. Thank you very much.
Senhor Presidente da Câmara.
The Mayor of Évora Council, Mr. Oliveira. We apologize, we cannot hear the speaker. A very good morning and a warm welcome to Évora. I'd just like to welcome you to this town. This town has played a particularly important role in the history of this country. Its role today is important, and we hope to continue to be important in the future. This town has more than 2,000 years of history. And all historical periods are represented in this town through our cultural and architectural heritage, which has been and meant that Évora has been designated as a town which is the heritage of humanity, and this since 1996. We are very proud of this fact. because it means that we are amongst the places that warrant respect, esteem, consideration, and love from the whole of humanity. There were two reasons for us receiving this honor. This is partly due to the university here, and it's also because we are perhaps the best example of what to call the dark ages of our country, or rather the golden age of our country, when wealth was gathered and there was a great deal of knowledge, technology developed, particularly the 16th century, the 15th and the 16th century. Portugal was a leading country in terms of knowledge, research, thinking, arts, culture, and Évora played a very important role during that period of our history, and an important role in Europe. Many writers, many people were trained in Évora, and this gave us a global dimension at the time. Évora, therefore, is part of the World Heritage. We have a great deal of interesting history. Visitors from all parts of the world come here, and it's estimated that we have 10 times more visitors than we do population. We have 60,000 inhabitants at the moment, and recent figures have shown we have more than 600,000 visitors a year. This means that tourism is clearly not mass tourism, it's cultural tourism. People who want to visit and encounter our local culture. Our historical center is not a museum. It's not closed or stopped any way in time. It is lived in, it's occupied, it's used, and there is clearly a human presence with some very specific features regarding life in this town. As said, we have a lot of cultural, religious tourism. We have components in our heritage that go right back to the first century, to the Roman period, the Roman occupation. We have megalithic sites also. This is interesting for studying prehistoric times. So the whole region is very significant in this respect. And we are perhaps one of the most interesting sites for megalithic research. And we have a number of archaeological sites that have been identified. So we have a past, we have a present, and we want to have a future. And the subject that brings you here is energy and sustainability. And these are part of our development model. We are anxious to invest in these, and we now have the fourth world producer of solar panels for photovoltaic energy. And this is industrial development that we're continuing to encourage. And we're also very concerned with the sustainability issue, not only in economic terms, but in social terms. And we mustn't lose that component from our sites. It means sustaining people and encouraging people to have high-quality, decent living standards. And these, indeed, are the demands of families of the 21st century. I don't want to run on for too long. This is just a very quick idea, just to give you a very quick idea of what Évora is like. I hope during your visit you will get further information. Mr. Bravo Nico, of course, is an ideal person. He's from Évora, and he will be able to give you any further information you should require. I'm very proud that you have started your visit by coming to Évora. You will see that the region, the Alentejo, is very beautiful at this time of year. We think sustainability is a key word, and we do our utmost to try and be a competitive region for the future and capable of retaining families here in this region. Many people like to live here, and we hope that they will be happy in doing so. So I wish you all the best. I hope you will feel at home. I hope you will have a very positive surprise when visiting the town, and perhaps encourage you to come back and visit us again. We're not just a collection of stones. We have lots of good wine. We have excellent food. This is a safe, very quiet, tranquil place to visit. It's possible to interact with the local population very easily. And so I hope you will come back in the near future. You will always be welcome to this town. And should you require anything on the part of the local council, we will do our utmost to satisfy you in that respect. So I wish you all the best, and I hope that the organizer of the conference will come up with good results at the end. Thank you. So thank you very much. So that's just winds up the welcome session. Thank you very much to both of the gentlemen for welcoming us here. And let us now move on to this morning's panel. And could I please call up Professor Rui Namurad Rosa and Paulo Ferrão, who are going to speak on the first panel.
Just some information for you about the panel, the members of the panel as well. Yesterday afternoon and last night and early this morning, in the wee hours of the morning, we were receiving your contributions, your inputs to our draft resolution. And we would just like to thank you for the work that you put into that. That was an extraordinary amount of work that you put into it. And really, it has very much helped to enrich the original text, which we now have. We still have to incorporate some of the suggestions that were made. And this will be done by the Secretariat today. And I think it will be in a position to present this to you. Having inputted the overwhelming majority of the comments that you have put in, we would just wanted to inform you of this. We're still working on this, but if you have any more suggestions for improvements, you still can do so. Just give in your suggestions to the Secretariat of the IPC, and we will make sure that they are inputted and incorporated into the final text. Thank you very much for your collaboration. It's been fantastic, and it really has enriched our text greatly. Today, we have a very full day. We have a panel where we will be talking, because already yesterday we talked about energy issues, energy and sustainability. We're going to talk about the reality in Portugal. We have Professor Rosa, who is the full professor here at the University of Évora. I'd like to thank him very much for making his time available to speak with us. And we have Paulo Ferrão, who is the coordinator of the MIT Portugal program. So he has been promoting a very important scientific collaboration project. with various Portuguese institutions and, of course, the American one, the MIT. Next, we will have a brief break so that we can all gather together and perhaps discuss your concerns and look at the draft revolution. It will be 10 or 15 minutes, which will allow us to do that. We'll have a coffee break or a tea break, and then we will present the draft resolution. The closing ceremony will happen in line with the program at about 12:15. We won't have the chair of the IPC here because, unfortunately, he has some of his own commitments in his organization. But otherwise, we will proceed as follows. And so then we should finish by about 12:30, 12:45. We will then be having lunch in front. There's a restaurant within the university, and the university is offering us this lunch. Before or after the lunch, we will also be visiting Évora University. It's very pretty. It's very beautiful. And I think the dean referred to this. And in the afternoon, we will have our field visits. We will be visiting two hydropower stations. The first is located in Amaralesia, which is in the Moura district in Lower Alentejo. And the MP from this district, who is also a member of the Communist Party, Mr. Soeiro, he will be with. I don't know whether he will be with us, but I think he might do. And because really this is this belongs to him, it's within his ambit. So after Amaralesia, we will go and visit the Alqueva Dam Initiative, and this also works on hydropower. It uses water, obviously, and therefore we have collaboration with EDP. So we will have an engineer and representative, Cruz de Moraes, will be with us from EDP. And finally, we will have a more informal time so that we can socialize and also look at some fields and places in Alentejo, the places where we grow vines and where we have excellent wines. This will be in Esporão. And I think that a lot of people who were involved in producing these wines will be with us. Certainly, you will be able to taste them. And I think this is something we can be proud of. I hope that you will enjoy this day that we have prepared for you. And having said this, I will now give the floor to Professor Rui Namorado Rosa.
Good morning. I am addressing you in English. I believe that most of you will be more knowledgeable on English than on Portuguese, so I think it might make life a little easier. I am very honored to have been invited by the chairman of this conference to address you. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity of speaking before such a distinguished audience about such an important issue as energy and sustainability. So, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members of parliament and other honorable authorities, what I have to do is to fetch my message. and I thank you for the opportunity of doing so. In a first moment, Portugal and Europe, very briefly. You can see that the total primary energy supply of Portugal has been growing steadily along the years, with a large contribution from oil and also some renewable energy components. Energy production, domestic energy production, is represented only about 15% of the total energy supply. So Portugal is heavily dependent on imports. And here you find what is the domestic production, according to the data provided by International Energy Agency. This other graph shows the consumption of oil products. That's the main primary energy source is oil, imported oil. And we see here the importance of heavy fuel oil and middle distillates. That means fuel for transportation and steel fuel for heating. Not very noble use of oil products. So that's some room for improvement. Here you can see the composition and the growth of the electricity generation with a base load of coal, imported coal, at the moment all imported coal, hydroelectric, that's an important component, and you will visit an important dam this afternoon, have that opportunity, and of lately, also in green, you find a composition input, important input of gas. Maybe not a very noble use for gas to produce electricity, but that's the case. Overall, we see that in 25 years' time, roughly, there has been an important growth in consumption, mainly in industry and in transportation, transport sector. Also in the building sector, but industry and the transport sector. Now, referring for a while to this university, in this university we develop energy research, development, and demonstration in a number of fields, some with more in-depth, others we are beginning. And I mentioned some of them. They are over there, solar radiation resource and thermal and electrical power technologies, wind resource and technology, geological resources, identification and assessment, geological reservoirs as far as hydrocarbon, geological sequestration of CO2 and geothermal resource, biomass production and conversion into fuels, ocean resources prospection and assessment, autonomous electrical energy provision, grid integration management and stability, built environment conditioning and domotics, efficient energy conversion and storage technologies. All these are issues of our interest and to more or less extend our abilities and skills. Here you can have some images illustrating our work. We work, for instance, observation of the Earth from, in particular, climate, weather conditions and climate, both using satellite platforms and surface instrumentation platforms. On that corner, you can see just a surface platform standing or floating on the dam that you are visiting this afternoon, and where you can study the microclimate and study the composition of the atmosphere. Down you see how we have contributed to the development of the geothermal atlas of Europe, and also how we are contributing for the extension of the continental platform under Portuguese jurisdiction in the framework of the Treaty of Oceans. Our work is not done in isolation, it's done in a context of cooperation, international cooperation, regional cooperation, and in at national level in contributing for a consortium that is being built up among state laboratories, universities, and research units. We also cooperate with a number of enterprises, and they are partners in a number of our projects. If you look at the European Union, you have here roughly an image of that depicts the resources, fuel resources in the European Union. For comparison, in the corner there are the worldwide resources of the same fuels, coal, oil, and gas. So Portugal is not very well endowed with fossil resources. That's why you are 85% dependent on imports for energy supply. But the situation for the European Union as a whole is not much better. European Union indigenous primary energy production is depleting. European Union energy production satisfies less than half of its needs. And we import, European Union, oil from OPEC, 38%, Russia, 33%, Norway, 16%, and so on. And as far as gas is concerned, Russia, 42%, Norway, 24%, Algeria, 18%, and so on. So we are, as the European Union, heavily dependent on a very few number of providers of suppliers of gas and oil. Sources of coal imports are also less concentrated. The largest suppliers being of coal being Russia and South Africa, but there are several other ones of importance. So the situation is not so constrained. In this picture, we see the flows of crude oil around the world, inter-regional flows of crude oil. And you see different arrows pointing into Europe. Coming from Russia, coming from Africa, coming from the Middle East. That's our international dependence from oil. And if you look eastwards, we have a grid of pipelines, oil and gas pipelines, supplying the European Union, coming from Russia and from other nations around the Caspian Sea. And in particular, if you look into gas, you have a more extensive grid of gasoducts, coming from the east, some being planned to be built in blue, and some coming from south, from Africa, from North Africa and Middle East. That's a very important connection as well. Depicted are also the ports equipped for liquefied natural gas imports that Portugal has such installation nearby in Sines, and also the reservoirs for having reserves for providing for shortcomings. The European Union very recently issued a second strategic energy review and has provided a number of scenarios for the year 2020 in just over 10 years' time. And we can realize that whatever the scenario, whatever the effort, whatever the price of the oil that has been considered, that the primary energy demand and the primary energy imports will stay very high. So we have a problem in Europe. But now I should like to address the energy and sustainability from the wider point of view. We have here a picture that reminds us that for the past century and a half, the world population has increased steadily, and that the consumption of energy per capita also has increased steadily, although having slowed down after the oil shocks in 73 and 79. These two curves, they both contribute for a very rapid growth of worldwide supply of primary energy. And that's the graph provided by the International Energy Agency, where you can see how dramatically the world supply of primary energy has increased since about the mid-century, past 20th century, with a very large contribution coming from oil, and an increasing fraction of gas and coal as well. In this graph, we see how along the ages, the consumption of energy has been increasing, and how it has been spent by different civilizations along centuries or millennia. Nowadays, technological civilization spends much energy, about, on average, nearly 12 kilowatt per capita, most being in productive activities, industry and agriculture in white, but also very large shares in transport and commerce, and in domestic economy, housing, services, and so on. Say, the average world is a composition, a combination of these last three columns. Because you know that people on Africa don't live like people in North America. As a matter of fact, today, reality is a combination of these last three columns. Now, looking at the world supply of crude oil and all liquid fuels, I have these pictures to draw your attention to the main source of energy supply in the whole world. And we see that conventional crude oil and all liquid fossil fuels, they are growing steadily, notwithstanding the fact that the growth rate has diminished after the first and second oil shocks. On the right, you can see the contribution coming from the so-called non-conventional oil. So what is on the right is the wedge between those two curves on the left-hand side. The scales are different. This has been expanded. And you see what are the contributions from natural gas liquids, polar oil, oil sands, extra heavy crude oil, and biofuels. They are relatively small contributions, but important to maintain the steady growth of overall liquid hydrocarbon liquids. These graphs also depict the growth in this last decade and in the last few years, pointing to the attainment of a plateau. We have entered a plateau for both crude oil and total liquids fuel in these last few years, since 2005. You have entered the plateau. Notwithstanding, in the this corner down here, notwithstanding increase, but a very tiny increase in biofuels. This graph shows in a very brief way how different countries or regions in the world consume their energy by primary energy source and how much they consume according to per capita consumption, vertical axis, and according to the population, horizontal axis. Now, going deeper into hydrocarbon resources and supply. There are a number of issues that should be addressed. This graph illustrates how the exploration effort that has been developed along 150 years has conducted to discoveries of reserves of hydrocarbons, in particular oil, crude oil. And we see how a small effort have produced large amounts of cumulative reserves in the Middle East, and how these curves have developed differently in different regions, including Europe, that's in brown, the second from the bottom. You see how difficult, how much effort it has been necessary to develop number of wells drilled to be able to attain a cumulative amount of reserves that doesn't attain even 100 billion barrels of oil. This graph also illustrates the effort, now not in number of wells being drilled, but in time, elapsed time, since 1920, and we see that cumulative reserves have grown very fast in the class of very big reservoirs in black. On the contrary, tiny, small reservoirs in blue, they have been growing steadily but at a very slow rate. That picture suggests that most reserves that have been found are found in very big reservoirs, easy to find and easy to explore. And this picture illustrates that fact, that very important fact, that 14 reservoirs, hydrocarbon reservoirs, provide 20% of the oil being produced worldwide. On the, these are the supergiant reservoirs. Very few countries have one or two of them. Very few. There are 14 worldwide. On the opposite end, we have over 4,000 small reservoirs that altogether provide 53% of oil. So roughly speaking, very tiny reservoirs produce half of the oil, and the other half of the oil is produced by big reservoirs, of which a large percentage are very a small percentage of reservoirs produce a large amount. So production is highly concentrated. The other problem they should address is that we have to look for, to prospect oil and gas in places where you never ever explored before. And this illustrates the prospection and actual production in deep offshore. That means at in the sea, at seafloor deeper than 200 meters. And we see how far you have to go to find oil in the offshore. This graph is no longer updated. It's 4 years old. And at that time, prospection or exploration was going on at nearly 3,000 meters depth, and actual production was already attained nearly 2,000 meters depth, very harsh circumstances and very expensive. The same could be said about polar oil, oil in polar regions. Antarctica is protected. You cannot explore Antarctica in point of view of economical exploration, but the Arctic has been prospected and has started to be exploited in Alaska and in Norway and Russia. The production has already started in very harsh conditions, in offshore and in extreme low temperatures that make the process very difficult. Also, to draw your attention to another point is that when extracting oil, gas as well, but particularly oil, it is easy at first. It gushes out, but afterward you have to put pressure in to have enhanced oil recovery, to be able to keep going the production. And eventually you have to resort to extreme means that are meant, they are told there. And in any case, if you attain 50% recovery of the oil in place, you are doing very well. Now, there is another point that should be addressed as well. EROI is short for Energy Return on Energy Invested, measures how much energy, say, oil barrels, needs to be spent in order to extract another barrel of oil. EROI decreases from stage to stage, and recovery of oil in place is never complete. Once the EROI of a primary energy source approaches one, it makes no physical sense to produce heat. You spend more than you get back. The ROI of oil is shrinking fast. It has already shrunk by approximately a factor of 10. It is currently somewhere around 10. So it fell from 100 in early, in the first quarter of past century to about 10 today. These estimates are difficult to have exact estimates because of lack of industrial data that properly might account for the calculations. But that's the effect is there for sure. This graph illustrates how oil and condensate, liquid condensates in green, have developed along the past centuries. And in red, you have the discoveries that have been accumulated in the past century as well. These very fast up and going lines are the discoveries. And the more steadily curves, they represented the consumption of oil and gas worldwide. You see how gas and oil worldwide are increasing whenever, whereas the discoveries are declining. And this is made clear, more clearly here in this other graph, where we have taken 5-year averages for discoveries and for production, and where it becomes clearly evident that since the early 80s, the extraction of oil has outpassed and is outpassing more and more the discoveries. So we are using back our reserves. You have an account in the bank. We are withdrawing the money from the bank, and the bank doesn't provide an interest rate on what we have there. The same happens with the gas, although the extraction of gas has overtaken the discoveries only more recently. Only 10 years ago. But the trend is clear and is the same. Here is a map, a table, making a summary of the different amounts of oil, conventional or regular oil, unconventional oil, heavy oil, deep water, polar, gas, liquids, and other categories of non-conventional oil. And this table that is based on ultimate reserves that are not conservative point to year 2008 for a peak of production of oil of all categories. Although heavy oil, deep water oil, and polar oil and gas liquids will still grow in future. But that growth is not enough to compensate for the decline, pronounced decline, of regular conventional oil. And this picture now shows how many countries have been producing oil along the past century, have passed the peak of their production capacity and have entered into decline, country after country. And you see that just half a dozen of countries had not yet attain the peak of their production capacity. Of course, here are not mentioned the former Soviet Union, and are not mentioned the Middle East countries, because the Middle East countries. But altogether, there are another six countries that have not passed their peak, besides these that are shown here on the right-hand side. And the thing is a little more complicated or more difficult, because those countries that still manage to produce large amounts of oil, they are comparatively richer and tend to be growing faster their economies, investing their petrol dollars or petrol euros into economic growth. So they consume faster than other countries, importing countries do. So that the export-import of oil has entered or had a peak and will be into decline very soon. We could think that about coal, things would be different. But here we have that the production of coal, given official estimates, are not my guess, official estimates by the German Geological Survey, from the International Energy Outlook, that from the produced by the Environmental Agency of the United States. You see that the trend of coal production will go past a peak capacity by mid-century. And putting all fossil fuels together, green is for oil, red is for natural gas, black is for coal, we see them all put together, and is shown in blue, the big peak. It goes through a maximum somewhere in the next 1-2 decades. In this graph is also shown projections for the world population, keeping growing and then entering some sort of steady state or decline of world population. It is not my guess either. It's United Nations and International Institute of Applied Systems Analysis. Putting this data together, you see that the consumption per capita of all fossil fuels, and all fossil fuels, they represent nowadays 85% of world energy, primary energy supply. All fossil fuels together, per capita, you see that they represent a phenomenon in human history that lasts only 2 centuries. And that in a few decades, we are going through the peak of this this era or epoch of fossil fuels. In a few decades, we cannot count on them to keep our economic growth or maintain our economy level. The same can be said of material resources, renewable or not renewable. We see this graph of in the United States, for instance, 20th century, the growth of gross domestic product has gone faster, but not much faster than material consumption and energy consumption. And as far as materials are concerned, also taking the example of the United States, that's a very well-studied object case. Here is the composition of material consumption. The largest share on the top are construction materials, and underneath are industrial minerals, and underneath recycled metals and primary metals. And only at the very bottom are wood products and agriculture products. The very bottom. Okay. Resource extraction and depletion. Even the renewable resources are depletable if you extract them at a rate higher than the replenishment, that the rate of reposition. That is true with water in the wells, is true with fisheries, and that graph shows, illustrates that case. How are depleted fisheries, and how some are on the other side, some are still underexploited. In this example, as historical examples as well, on the left-hand side you see the case of whaling. In the mid of 19th century, whaling, fishing whales, was very important for the very many products extracted from whales, oil, bone, and other products. And we see that the production of oil went through a peak and then declined. And this, already in this century, and second half of this century, the same as happened with sturgeon for production of caviar. And not only caviar. It went through a peak. It was overexploited. So overexploitation of overdevelopment of renewable resources are not sustainable. As far as mineral resources coming from the crust, we see that only a tiny amount, rather less than 1%, represents the so-called base metals that are essential for our economy. Copper, nickel, zinc, lead, and some other ones. They exist in very tiny quantities. And it is important to draw your attention to the fact that as we extract the ores from the mines, that with cumulative production of these ores, extraction or production of these ores, the grade of these ores decline from the left to the right. And as the grade declines, the energy cost of extracting and processing the ore to obtain the final product increases steadily, and also how the recovery rate of the product is decreasing. That means the fraction of material in place that I can recover to enter the economy is diminishing. These cumulative effects determine that a large number of important mineral products are becoming scarce. This historical example of copper in the United States, you see how along 2.5 centuries, the grade of the ore has declined consistently. At the same time as the stock of copper in the economy of the United States has been growing. It has been growing. But the grade of the ore and the cost, economic and energy cost of extracting it, is going higher and higher up. And this illustrates graphically how the inputs coming from nature relate to the outputs going to the economy, both in mass and in energy. This represents the system of extracting, processing, concentrating, refining, and obtaining the metal. In this case, copper, but could be otherwise. And you see the proportion between input and output and the proportion of waste is going down here. This is case of gold. And you look at this picture, it reminds us of the case of oil. You see that the gold, and in several countries, large producer countries, the gold production has been declining for a number of years. Is the case of South Africa, is the case of the United States, and so on. All different producers are going through a peak capacity and falling down. And overall, there is signs that we have passed the peak capacity of production of gold worldwide. That's because the cost of extraction, it, energy and economical cost of extraction is becoming exceedingly high. Many of the major companies are not keeping up with reserve replacement and are also showing declining production and reserve profiles. Lower average ore grade and higher production costs are occurring. Like gold, several high-tech materials are scarce, energy-intensive, and expensive. And we have this graph showing how Europe is dependent from other countries for importing some very special materials that are essential for the high technology society. You will see how South Africa, they have nearly the monopoly of some rare metals. The same being said of Russia and China, Australia, and South America. And we are dependent on these imports, notwithstanding the efforts that the mining industry is accumulating in the last few years, notwithstanding that growing efforts of exploration, investing in finding more reserves, the situation is as depicted. And this graph shows in a very clear way, even for iron, that now is going to have a spot market, is not going to be sold, traded in the long range, will be traded in spot market, that also for iron, in the case of the United States here, is illustrated in brown, that's the reserves, what is below the ground. And in other colors, what is above the ground. And we see that in the United States, roughly half of the iron has moved from below ground to above the ground. And that's for iron. That's the material that you would have consider to be granted, that would never be short of. And as a matter of fact, we have gone so far having moved it from underground to above ground. Of course, I am. I apologize for being so long. Of course, my message is longer. It will be in the PowerPoint that will be available to you. And I was too long out of my enthusiasm. And I am very grateful before this distinguished audience for having paid attention. to me. Thank you very much.
Os meus agradecimentos ao professor Namorado Rosa e com as nossas desculpas pelo facto.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Rosa, and I apologize for having to cut you short. Now I think we should take stock for a moment because we're running rather late. And I think we really need to try and comply with our objectives in the short time that's left to us. You already will have received the Portuguese and the English versions of our draft resolution. The French version, I think, has already been distributed. The English and the Portuguese versions are being distributed now, or will be in a minute. The latest version to be distributed, as I said, this latest version incorporated suggestions that we received early this morning, not the last ones received in the morning. Now, what I would suggest to you is that in terms of methodology, I would suggest the following. I know there are colleagues who would still like to see some amendments, who would still like to see some additions to this draft resolution, but I would ask you to give us those suggestions in writing so that we can make the necessary amendments. I think we'll have to set a deadline for this. Let's say about 15 minutes after you've got the final versions. I think that will be time enough to make any last-minute alterations. It's 11:55 at the moment, so let's set 12:15 as a deadline for the last requests for amendments. Please give them to us in writing, and that will make drafting the final text easier. I'd like to ask the Secretariat to please, therefore, incorporate any proposals received by 12:15 so that immediately after we hear the presentation by Paul Ferrand, we will be able to come up with the final texts. Our work is done just with one single aim in mind, namely that this resolution of the 16th Interparliamentary Conference faithfully and objectively reflect what you feel and have heard during this conference. This is our aim, so we will try to comply with that. So thank you very much for your understanding, and thank you for your cooperation in this respect. And so 12:15, please, is the deadline for final contributions. Let me now give the floor to Professor Paulo Ferrão and ask Professor Rosa to please chair for me because I need to go to the Secretariat and assist them there.
Distinguished Parliament members, dear friends, I'm very impressed with the work you are doing and of course, we are very glad that...
Muito obrigado pela vossa presença. Estamos muito satisfeitos com o desempenho, por todos aqueles que se preocupam pela ciência e que asseguram também a promoção da sustentabilidade e da utilização da energia. O meu papel não é flexível, depende do tempo que é necessário para preparar a resolução. E vou tentar fazer com que possam aproveitar o melhor do tempo que me queiram conceder. A minha intervenção tornou-se fácil depois da intervenção do professor Namorado Rosa, por ter coberto o domínio que quer abordar. E agora trata-se da visão do futuro. Temos um conjunto de problemas, de constrangimentos, e gostaria de tratar de uma pequena nota, utilizando as palavras do professor Namorado Rosa, do metabolismo de uma crise. Estamos por uma crise e a crise tem muito a ver com aquilo que foi dito. E gostaria de mostrar uma pequena imagem. consideramos que isto é a economia e que nesta economia há muitos materiais, aliás, muitos entrantes provindo de diferentes materiais, tanto de caráter doméstico como externo. Gostaria que retenham um nome, o DMI, o número de materiais que provêm do mercado doméstico ou do externo. Por exemplo, isto são os alimentos que ingerimos e que correspondem e que são produzidos seja em Portugal ou no estrangeiro. Quanto ao resto, aquilo que sai da economia podem ser exportações e produtos úteis e o resto é transformado automaticamente em desperdícios ou poluição. Eu gostaria de vos mostrar que, de modo em média, quando se considera algo, em 8% de material que entra num processo de transformação sai também sob a forma de poluição. E isto é relevante. Trata-se de um estudo que foi feito nos últimos anos e vou tentar explicar este gráfico e mostrar a sua importância. O DMI trata-se de quantidade em toneladas que os cidadãos pelo mundo fora, trata-se de um gráfico que se aplica ao mundo e durante os últimos 50 anos, o número de toneladas que cada cidadão, e em média e neste mundo, consome por ano em termos de desenvolvimento humano. E isto aparece representado como uma função do PIB per capita. Países como a China ou a Índia, que podem ter um PIB per capita de 5 mil dólares por ano, consomem 5 ou 6 toneladas per capita por ano. O que quer dizer que cada cidadão consome 5 ou 6 toneladas por ano. O que isto mostra é que há uma regra universal que mostra que, em função do progresso das nações e do seu desenvolvimento humano, aparece uma relação íntima entre aquilo que são os ganhos, o PIB do país e o consumo de materiais. Podemos imaginar o que seria o mundo se a China e a Índia, que crescem em termos de PIB e que aumentam também o consumo de materiais e que faz com que seja insustentável a continuação de seguir este caminho. Quando temos um PIB de 50 dólares per capita, o comportamento da sociedade muda e aparece uma espécie de linha contínua que mostra que não há crescimento de consumo de materiais e que não há uma diminuição. Mas, provavelmente, teremos um ressalto, o que é um grande problema. Em Portugal, onde preparámos estudos que mostram que Portugal, nas últimas dezenas, mostra uma evolução, passamos de uma economia deste tipo para outra daquele tipo, permite-me dizer que se trata de mecanismo da economia que é o da construção e temos que mostrar, passar uma economia que deixa de construir e promove a inovação, promove a boa ciência e a sua utilização e isto é uma grande motivação que é a vossa e que me permite não continuar a elaborar. Tenho como convicção que devemos encaminhar os esforços para mudar de caminho. Isto em termos de energia. Analisei todos os materiais, mas para a energia é a mesma coisa. O GDP, o PIB está correlacionado com o consumo energético, o que todos sabemos que pode ser um grande problema. Quando vemos aquilo que é a pegada ecológica, aparece claro que se continuarmos assim, vamos precisar de 1,20% de terras. Em 2030 serão necessárias duas terras para apoiar este tipo de desenvolvimento. Não temos duas terras, o que faz com que seja necessário fazer algo, mudar aquilo que é o nosso dia-a-dia. Isto aparece claro. Estamos insatisfeitos? Não. Estamos satisfeitos e continuar a fazer as coisas com consciência da situação. Não estou a dizer nada de novo, mas claro que na União Europeia há este processo da modernização do consumo energético e do meio ambiente e que já estabelecemos alguns objetivos muito ambiciosos, como poupança de 20% da energia até 2020, 20% de redução de CO2, o contributo para uma diminuição do consumo mundial energético de energia. E esta semana tive a ocasião de contactar o representante nacional da Comissão em Bruxelas para dizer que o plano de recuperação apoiado pela União Europeia inclui 3 investimentos neste domínio. Um, quanto à eficácia do consumo energético em edifícios, outro consumo energético dos automóveis e outro ainda. Do mesmo modo, a nova administração dos Estados Unidos mostrou uma estratégia que permite que, em termos de recuperação e plano de recuperação, vão investir em eficácia energética e querem criar cerca de 2 milhões de empregos. Para fazer o quê? Para melhorar os edifícios, construindo produção fotovoltaica, melhoria da rede energética nacional, etc. As políticas europeia e dos Estados Unidos não estão perfeitamente alinhadas para atingir estes objetivos. Mas Barack Obama diz que vamos continuar com a política as usual. Mas que a Fundação para a Ciência apresentou um estudo onde se assegura a promoção ou compromete os Estados Unidos para que se transforme a sua política de modo a ser sustentável sob o ponto de vista energético. É necessário mudar, e mudar pelas pessoas. Há muitos programas. O programa português, o governo português decidiu de uma parceria com a MIT, a segunda maior parceria com a MIT pelo mundo fora, a primeira sendo de Singapura e a segunda é com Portugal. O que quer isto dizer? O grande objetivo desta parceria, o de desenvolvimento na Europa, é a ideia de sistemas que procuram resolver alguns problemas da população, fazendo com que estejam em conjunto ciências sociais, tecnologia e economia. É um esforço multidisciplinar e, baseado com isto, é necessário que se cubram novos domínios neste programa que leva à criação de novos programas de doutoramento e de mestrados, que são sistemas de transporte, sistemas de sistema sustentável e novos sistemas de transporte, bem como sistemas de bioengenharia. E isto permite-nos ter contactado diferentes universidades, são várias, e talvez seja o resultado mais importante da primeira fase do programa, que é de contactar com várias universidades para trabalhar em conjunto, para que as suas teses sejam feitas em conjunto, para que a investigação seja feita em conjunto, porque as soluções em qualquer sítio do mundo exigem uma massa crítica. Se não nos reunirmos, será muito difícil, com de tal dispersão de esforços, termos os resultados. Este é o objetivo primeiro do MIT. Fazer com que as universidades trabalhem em conjunto não é fácil. Evidentemente que o programa se encontra no seu segundo ano e tivemos a possibilidade de criar programas conjuntos de doutoramento e há 154 doutorandos de todos os países da Europa estão a vir. Estamos a ter estudantes de diferentes países e os programas ter muitos programas com grandes participações de outras universidades. E os estudantes doutorandos, durante 3 anos, terão sendo supervisor português e do MIT e passam 1 ano no MIT. E estamos muito satisfeitos com os resultados. Quanto ao programa de energia sustentável que acompanha os interesses desta conferência, permite-nos dizer que aquilo que queremos fazer em sistema de energia sustentável é assegurar um grau inovador e uma abordagem inovadora nos seguintes termos. As tecnologias existem, os problemas existem também. Aquilo que é necessário é fazer com que as tecnologias funcionem em conjunto, resolvam os problemas e nas diferentes regiões o façam, o que não pode ser feito sem que haja uma participação regional. Para o assegurar, é necessário investir muito na promoção de soluções que são importantes para as regiões, para as zonas urbanas, para as zonas urbanas, e há vários modelos de desenvolvimento e é muito difícil encontrar modelos que deem satisfação em termos geográficos, em termos de espaços temporais, satisfação às várias situações. O que faz com que aquilo que quero falar agora é a visão do futuro. Estamos a mudar de paradigma energético. Até agora, a produção, produtores de eletricidade, grandes centrais, e depois a energia vai pelo país fora, utilizando a rede, e se dá satisfação à procura, seja onde for. O que faz aparecer vários problemas. Problemas que são da perda da energia em termos da produção centralizada, perde-se energia ao longo da rede, e é muito difícil combinar diferentes formas de energia em termos de consumo, e mais uma vez há ocasiões que são perdidas. Aparece óbvio que o futuro não é Lisboa. É o futuro da descentralização. Cada consumidor tem a possibilidade de ser fornecedor. E quando se fala de renováveis, isto é inerente ao paradigma das energias renováveis. Energia solar, nas casas, seja qual for o tipo. Para melhorar a produção de produção eólica, geotérmica, tudo isto exige elementos importantes. Distribuição e combinação de diferentes fontes de produção energética, o que é muito complexo e que é impossível de fazer de modo centralizado. Aquilo que será o lado racional ou a base da minha intervenção é de dizer que hoje estamos à procura de uma revolução em termos de sociedade que nos permite utilizar a internet, a energia pela net, o que faz com que agora vamos sentir que o mundo da energia será o da internet do futuro. Aproveitar ao máximo as oportunidades que nos são dadas para todos nós, para que tenhamos a possibilidade de participar. E é este o grande problema da MIT em Portugal, ajudar este país para que prepare a rede do futuro. Com todos os problemas, que fazer para o futuro? Nada, é uma alternativa que não deve ser considerada, ou então duas outras alternativas: reduzir a procura, aumentando a eficácia energética, melhorando a gestão, intervindo no mecanismo de preço, de fixação de preços, e também promovendo a melhor utilização das energias renováveis, biomassa, solar, vento. Mas não basta. Temos de fazer as duas coisas ao mesmo tempo. Combinar este tipo de abordagem, mostrando qual a nossa visão e que permite dizer que isto deve acontecer. E isto trata-se de software energético, redes inteligentes, a mobilidade, melhoria do parque automóvel, etc. Por aí fora. Tudo isto estamos a preparar um projeto de demonstração em São Miguel, num dos nossos aliados, que poderá tornar-se um exemplo de como, neste caso, é possível aumentar a penetração de energias renováveis de 40% a 80%. Evidentemente que se trata-se de um desafio difícil que só pode ser efetuado pelo contacto entre universidades e diferentes firmas, como a EDP, que esteve convosco ontem, a FATSEC, Martifer e outros que estão a cooperar connosco para a consecução deste projeto. E estamos a dar-vos aqui o elemento daquilo que estamos a fazer. Para que algo possa ser feito, seja onde for, é necessário entender a realidade local. Em termos sociais, quais são a procura da energia, quais são as oportunidades dadas às pessoas e, preparando de cenários, vou tentar explicar de onde se gasta a energia e tentar também analisar as diferentes alternativas, criando diferentes cenários, analisando em termos da realização, da implementação. E temos aqui um exemplo, não vou ser exaustivo, mas lançar-vos um desafio com aquilo que me parece importante em termos políticos. Quando vemos aqui este quadro, vemos à esquerda a energia primária que alimenta esta linha, esta ilha, onde vivem de 20 mil pessoas. Não é tão pequeno quanto isso. À direita, os circuitos energéticos. Toda a nossa orientação vai no sentido da procura. Temos que satisfazê-la, tentando saber qual é a procura energética para arrefecimento, para o transporte, para o aquecimento, para muitas outras coisas. Não me preocupa que se trata de vento, de petróleo, ou seja o que for, para a sua produção. Mas vemos o que se passa em termos da produção elétrica. E vemos que há, em laranja, o central geotérmica, que passa pelo processo de conversão e produz eletricidade. E a potência geotérmica em São Miguel produz cerca de 20% das necessidades energéticas de São Miguel. Mas não estamos a mentir ao dizer que a capacidade geotérmica não produz mais do que 10% da produção primária, o que não é contraditório. E podemos julgar com estes números em termos de preparação política. Aquilo que aparece claro, como todos os outros casos do mundo desenvolvido, é que o transporte depende totalmente dos carros e os carros consomem muito petróleo. Não há nenhum sistema se não se altera o sistema de transportes. Aquilo que quero mostrar agora é o facto de haver outros desafios. Considerado que se trata de um padrão diário de consumo elétrico, durante a noite muito pouco e durante o dia há picos de consumo. Imaginemos que no caso de São Miguel há cerca de 30 megawatts de produção de origem geotérmica. Podemos duplicar, mas sob o ponto de vista teórico é impossível. O que acontece é que durante a noite não haverá utilização de eletricidade, a razão pela qual não se pode aumentar a produção de eletricidade renovável. Mas durante o dia é necessário muita eletricidade. Uma resposta é de melhorar o sistema de armazenamento. Mas o armazenamento de energia não é fácil. Temos que encontrar modos inteligentes de o poder fazer. Evidentemente que um dos é o de elevar a água, como acontece hoje em dia no Alqueva, que poderão ver hoje, que é reversível, que faz com que a água passe pelas turbinas e volte a subir para a barragem. Mas a coisa pode ser melhorada. A dinâmica, o vento é, mas a dinâmica da procura é muito diferente. Mais uma vez, será necessário que haja modos diferentes de o poder fazer. O nosso objetivo, neste objetivo, é de desenvolver tecnologias que permitam que em conjunto se faça análise edifícios de transporte e renováveis para resolver o problema. E isto permite ver um pouco como a coisa pode ser feita. Vejam o que acontece com uma casa. Numa casa há muitos pontos de gasto energético. E aquilo que estamos a fazer, e aqui vou tentar ilustrar o conceito de energia alternativa, é de fazer o que segue. A desenvolver projetos de demonstração onde há um pequeno chip em cada um dos pontos dos equipamentos elétricos. E pode imaginar que este chip vos dará informação quanto ao consumo instantâneo de um determinado equipamento e que esta informação possa circular pelas linhas elétricas até à central, ao chip, e a informação passa. A nível central, na casa, no computador, haverá um equipamento que faça descodificação da informação e este equipamento tem a possibilidade de fazer com que a informação chegue à internet. Seja onde for que estejam no mundo, podem saber qual é o consumo na casa e onde há consumo. E também podem ver que há uma variação de consumo e até podem ver o pormenor daquilo que consumo o quê. Quando isto aparece no computador e a partir desse momento tem a possibilidade de fazer o que quiserem fazer em termos do consumo. Não esquecendo que o chip também pode cortar o consumo. E isto é muito importante, porque com este tipo de situação há um alinhamento perfeito e uma regulamentação perfeita que é dada pelos parlamentos nos diferentes países, permite fazer o que segue. Imaginem um sistema de uma ilha, que é um sistema muito difícil, não há rede, tudo o que a fazer tem que ser feito lá, não há a Espanha que possa ajudar, ou seja o que for. A questão então é a seguinte: se há um momento, em termos de consumo, onde há muita energia renovável, a rede pode entrar em contacto com a unidade doméstica, neste caso, para dizer que neste momento tem eletricidade muito barata. E, ao mesmo tempo, temos o carro elétrico ligado à casa e que está ligado ao sistema de informação também, que diz, não, isto é muito maravilhoso, a eletricidade agora é tão barata que vou, neste momento, carregar as minhas baterias. E, ao fazê-lo, estou a resolver, sem custos complementares, o problema da armazenagem de eletricidade. De manhã, há falta de vento, o preço chega à casa, que nesse futuro próximo seja um pouco mais, pode flutuar muito mais, muito, e o carro dirá, oh, hoje não deves utilizar o carro. A eletricidade está tão cara que ficas em casa, o carro fica em casa, e vendes eletricidade à rede, e assim ganhas o teu dia. É outro modo de... e utilizas outro modo de transporte. Assim resolves o problema, uma parte do problema, pelo menos, do fornecimento elétrico, por haver falta de eletricidade na rede. Trata-se de uma solução fantástica para a gestão. E todos os países do mundo, nomeadamente na Europa, estão à espera que isto possa vir a acontecer. Trata-se da concretização desta ideia da internet energética. Estamos a chegar a um mundo em que não há só informação de um lado, energia de outro. Podemos juntar as coisas e acredito firmemente que isto será a próxima grande revolução a ocorrer pelo mundo fora e Portugal quer ser parte desta circunstância e gostaria que todos os parceiros europeus possam participar dessa revolução. E este é um dos grandes objetivos do programa do MIT em Portugal. E agora, aquilo que gostaria de dizer neste caso é que se juntarmos os esforços de todas as casas, tenhamos a possibilidade de armazenamento. Quando se fala, por exemplo, de armazenamento de água e bombeamento de água do mar, e que aquilo que queremos desenvolver, considerando que já não temos uma ligação internet e elétrica, mas que as duas estão em conjunto e que podemos combinar energia e informação, e dizer que estes trabalhos são locais, não há soluções internacionais para isto. É necessário que haja soluções locais, que haja criação de emprego local, com conhecimentos locais. Isto também pode ter alguma influência a nível local. Vou terminar quando o Sr. Nico Bravo me dê uma indicação. Esta é a nossa visão para o sistema de futuro, que procura combinar diferentes tecnologias, que fará com que o consumo energético pelo mundo fora seja mais adequado e que vamos investir em pessoas para termos os líderes do futuro e fazer com que a ciência, os nossos estudos antes de doutorandos permitam tornar isto possível. E estamos à espera de o apoio por parte dos políticos, das iniciativas do tipo Eureka, para que tenhamos um futuro mais brilhante que nos dê a possibilidade de aproveitar as ocasiões que estão à nossa frente. Muito obrigado pela vossa atenção.
Muito obrigado ao professor Paulo Ferrão.
Thank you very much, Professor Paulo Ferrão. I'm sorry I was unable to hear your presentation and I missed out on an opportunity for learning something there, but I was outside trying to come up with the final version of our draft resolution. It is now ready. Just had in received in 3 or 4 last-minute proposals, so this was right down to the last minute. We've received contributions from you, and thank you once again for that. You've participated greatly in this activity. There's been a lot of interaction between us, and in my modest opinion, I think we have come up with a draft resolution of the 16th conference, which is significant and has taken aboard all your many opinions and contributions. The version that you will have received now is the version that Cristina Tavares has and is putting on the screen now. This is the final version. We have introduced into it 3 or 4 changes that I should like Cristina to indicate to you. So this is the text that you will have now. And we have a bullet point. This is a suggestion from the Spanish delegation that suggests scientific here be replaced by transnational. No, transnational will replace scientific here. So coordinate transnational networks. So the text will go ahead with the word transnational instead of scientific. Second amendment now.
É uma alteração que está incluída.
This is under point 4. And this has to do related to the observatory to monitor our activity. The Spanish proposal is that that version be included. That came from yesterday. And today we have a German suggestion that suggests that that paragraph be deleted. So it's the last paragraph under point 4. So I would ask the German delegation, do they still wish to delete this paragraph from point 4? I don't know where the German colleagues are actually sitting in the room. And ask the same question to the Spanish colleagues. Do you continue to want to retain this paragraph? So let me ask the German and the Spanish delegation. Could you perhaps negotiate this paragraph together and come up with a wording that you could both agree on? I think we could take aboard a version which was the result of the consensus between you. So could the two delegations perhaps come together and see what they can agree upon? Let us move on meanwhile. This is another proposal under point 6. The suggestion is to delete those two words, supporting programs. The German delegation considers that these two words be redundant. So can you agree on deleting those two words? If you agree, that's fine, and we move on. This is another Spanish delegation suggestion that these points under paragraph 6 once again, suggesting that this can be included under point 6 so that we can approve that, I think, and that will be included under point 6. So no further suggestions at the moment. Let's see if the German and Spanish delegations can come to an agreement on that specific point. I should like to thank Professor Paul Furlong and Ruina Moral Rosa for their presence this morning. Thank you very much for their contribution to our conference, and thank you very much on behalf of all of us this morning.
Iria e vou, neste momento, enquanto decorrem as negociações, informar-vos.
Now, while discussions are still going on, just let me inform you that we have the head of the Parliamentary Commission of Education and Science who has come here this morning after all. He's been able to make it, so could I ask Mr. José Antonio Seguro to come up and be with us in the closing session?
Senhoras e senhores congressistas, eu e...
Delegates, could I...
Sei que é difícil, mas nós...
I know it's difficult, ladies and gentlemen, but we must close our session now. Could you perhaps sit down? Could we just take 2 more minutes so that we can formally close our conference? For those on the right of the room, could you please resume your seats? Just a couple more minutes, please. And let me give the floor to the president of the Parliamentary Committee on Education and Science from Portuguese Parliament. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Bravo Nico. I'll be very brief at this stage. It is a pleasure for me to be here at this closing session and to be part of this conference and to share with you and say how happy we are on the part of the Science and Education Committee that we were chosen to be part of this conference. This means for us that work in the area of science, our work has been recognized, and that this our work has not just merely been a ritualistic burden. One of our best members was therefore appointed to chair this conference, and my first words go to my colleague Bravo Nico for the excellent work he's done in chairing this conference. And I feel sure that he has clearly expressed the feelings on the part of the Portuguese people and some of my fellow MPs who are here, and the priority that we give to scientific issues. Thank you very much indeed. Second note I've just jotted down. And the second thing is just to greet you. Unfortunately, I was unable to participate in your work yesterday. It's only possible for me to be here this this morning at the end of the session, but I have been told in detail of the work you've been doing, and I should like to thank you very much for coming to this country. I know that Eureka Initiative is doing very well at the moment. I know people want more Eureka for Europe and more Eureka outside the borders of Europe. I would like to associate myself to this, and I would like Europe to provide more financial resources to the support of science and research in Europe. If we look at the objectives of the Lisbon Agenda and its aims for 2010, we see that we are still below what the intentions of the government were at the time. So science should not just be a feather in our cap. Investment in science must be a priority to build a better Europe in terms of its economic and social model, but also in terms of world development. Therefore, I should like to leave this idea with you at a time when we're all talking about crisis. We mustn't confuse the symptoms with the causes. And I think one of the roles, one of the tasks of parliamentarians is to demand of governments that in the national plans and in European plans, they provide scientific support policies with sufficient resources so that there can be symbiosis can be achieved with economic activity, industry, and business, and that there be a harmonious relationship without too much bureaucracy that can hamper innovation, which European economy so much requires. Therefore, I welcome your participation from those who have come from other countries, and I hope that in the afternoon you will be able to get to know a very beautiful region of Portugal. Yesterday, you were in Lisbon, which is a beautiful city. Today, you're in a town of World Heritage with its wonderful monuments. And let me leave it at that because we're coming up to lunch now. Please enjoy the remaining hours you have in this country. And I wish you all the best and until the next Eureka conference in Israel. Thank you. Colleagues, just a couple of seconds to know whether the Spanish and the German delegation have managed to come to an agreement on the text. Can you tell us, have you come to an agreement on the text? Would you like to come up here? We have to agree on the draft resolution. Have you come to an agreement? Transnational. Is anyone opposed to that text, therefore, to solve the last query? Is anyone against this? If not, then I think we can approve the final text of the resolution of the 16th Interparliamentary Eureka Conference 2009, the text that you have seen on the screen this morning with the amendments that have been introduced. To conclude, I think we've almost come to the end of 2 days of excellent work. This conference, I think, has fulfilled our expectations. This is what we hoped such initiative would be, which would provide you with further knowledge on the Eureka Initiative in order to give us a better idea of how it works, its past, what the future holds for it, so that we as members of Parliament can make a significant constructive contribution in order to consolidate the Eureka Initiative. This interparliamentary conference comes under the Portuguese presidency of this initiative, and I should like to thank the Portuguese presidency through Professor Nunes de Ponte, who's with us, and thank him for all the cooperation he's provided Parliament with. and in putting this conference together and organizing it. So thank you very much indeed for all your support. Also, thanks to the Ministry of Science, Technology and Higher Education, which right from the outset made available to us the fullest information and technical and human resource backup. Thank you also to the support on the part of all the technical staff from the Portuguese Parliament. They have been magnificent in times of making time available to us 24 hours a day in a very friendly and warm way. My sincere thanks to the staff of Portuguese Parliament who have been excellent. And thanks to all of you. Thank you for coming to this country. Thank you for coming to our Parliament. Thank you for your contributions and your active participation. For submitting proposals to us to improve the quality of our work. And I think we conclude this conference formally now in the conviction that it has fulfilled its aims and that those who are participating in it hopefully will also have fulfilled their own expectations that they had in coming to Portugal. I hope that the expectations on the part of Portuguese Parliament have also been fulfilled. The idea was that an interparliamentary conference saw the light of day. This has been achieved. And I think we've done this with the best of our capacity. And I think we have fulfilled our objectives. So we hope to see you again in Israel next time, and on that occasion we will be able to see the state of Eureka in 2 years' time. Thank you very much to all of you.
Justice. Yes. Quite different. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Sim, Paulo Ferrão. A chave, pede uma chave de produto.
Antes de ontem.
Ah, não, vamos tentar. Está aqui.
Não, não tem chave nenhuma.
Não, ele está para pedir.
Ok. Ok. It is in Portuguese.
In Portuguese.
Yeah, that's... Well, I could understand when it was being shown, so I can understand.
Eu quero abrir mesmo os slides. E aqui na minha pele, só os slides.
Este é do Ferrão. Tem os outros?
Ah, não. Eu não tenho isto. Só tenho isto. Só tenho isto do fundo. Tenho isto e deste, se quiser. Lá no CD.
And then it's that one.
Ok.
And then it's that one.
Repara. Eu não gosto disto.
Abra a pena aqui.
Okay. A pena está aqui. Ok, agora okay, vamos aqui arrastar.
Aqui? Não.
Mas é que eu não tenho sensibilidade, sabe? Hey. Ok, it's it.
This is your pen.
Is it?
Não consigo arrastar.
Tente
lá. Not sensibility. Ok.
Deixa também?
A resolução. Ok.
What? Oh, the resolution. I think I'll also.
Okay. Okay. You want this?
That's fine. I'm not sure this is mine.
Eu penso que está ali fora em cima do... Eu penso que sim.
Ok, great. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Paula, posso desligar o computador?
Sim.
Essa é da comissão?
É.
Fazes?
O que está aí do Paulo Ferrão
não tem
em português? O que está aí do Paulo Ferrão está em português?
Queria abrir isto.
Abrir aqui. Aí. Ok. É expulsão. Obrigada.
Queria fazer
o dele será que copiou? Eu não vi aquilo copiar na dele, não sei porquê.
Não, essa resolução não nos interessa.
Aquilo não? Tiro fora?
Sim.
Vai para lá outra vez. É esta, não? Acho que é esta. Colar os instrumentos.
Está aqui.
Olha aí. não vi na perna dele fazer aquilo, a cópia. Será que copiou? Foi tão rápido que eu não tinha visto assim. João, mais por dia, não é por mim.
Não quero
achar isso. Eu sei. Pá, já está arrumado, depois não vale a pena dar trabalho à toa.
Eu não quero, exatamente, eu não quero achar.